Hello, everyone. I am sorry. I'm a couple minutes late. I am adjusting to a very new lifestyle here at the Crabtree House. Number one, my mornings are get up, do my usual, which is like work, work out, all the things. Plus, now I'm walking Mammy's dog and feeding Sissy and getting Mammy all started for the day. And then we have a new way we have to log into our Zoom account. And this morning I was like, I totally forgot about it and had to set that up. So it's going to need about probably a few more run-throughs on some morning shit before I get my crap together and get used to the new normal. So Mammy is doing, for all of you who want to know, Mammy is doing great. She had her surgery, what is today, Wednesday? So it'll be a week tomorrow. And so for all of you that are going to have shoulder surgery and stuff, she has done great. I will tell you, she was in incredible pain before her surgery. Like she couldn't even use her arm for a few months. Like she had to immobilize her right arm. And if she ever did anything, it would, you know, rare up so that she couldn't get relief. So the doctor, when he operated, when he talked to my brother right after, he just said, her shoulder was complete trash. Like he just said, I don't know how she's lasted this long. It was all bone on bone, ate up with arthritis. She had a bicep tear, a labral tear. Like there were so many things in there. So he cleaned everything up, replaced the shoulder. And the first day, of course, she's on, you know, a nerve block and stuff. And she kept saying, I just wish this would wake up. Well, it woke up in the middle of the night. And I kept telling her, stop wishing for that. It ain't gonna feel good when it wakes up. And that was really painful. So if you are going to have this shoulder surgery, start asking for the meds before you go to sleep. Because my brother said the same thing. He didn't have a total shoulder replacement, but he had something very similar. When the nerve block, like if you have morning surgery, typically is wearing off after you've gone to sleep at night. And then you wake up, it's gone. And like your body's like, what has happened? So she got her pain under control that day, and literally she's had one pain pill since she came home, and she took it on the first day just in case she needed it, and she's not needed it at all. She is already in less pain now than she was the day before surgery. Now, it's inconvenient because she's got an immobilized arm. She's got to have a lot of help. There, you know, she can't do a lot, but long story short, or the moral of this story is if you're putting it off for fear, like of the pain and stuff, I've got like, at least my mama swears up and down. She's like, this was worth every moment. Like especially the one day where the nerve block was there, it was the first time in like years she hadn't been in pain all day. She didn't even know what it was like. Like she was just like, I barely know what it's like to like have a day of my life where I'm not just in chronic aches and pains, because everything that she'd been in also knocked out, like her foot pain, her hip pain and stuff. So it's kind of neat for her to have that, but she's doing great. She'll be here for about 5 more weeks probably before she can go home. She's doing her therapy and all that kind of stuff. And I'm hanging in there fine. I thought I was going to be a terrible nurse. Turns out I'm a great adoptive dog owner. Me and Sissy are getting along perfectly. I'm enjoying spending time with Sissy and taking care of Mammy and not falling apart. So there we go. All right. There's a couple of things I want to talk about today. Number one, we're going to talk about the environmental cleanup and how to do that in terms of like helping you with finding your enough. I want to talk about that. There's one thing I do want to discuss first, and it wasn't planned, but I think it'll be valuable. So everyone last week did monk meals, and I'm going to find this post because I gave it to my team and said they should all read it anyway. I got to find it though. Print only. There we go. Somebody had done a monk meal. It's Sandy Brainerd. So Sandy, she did an incredible job on her monk meal. If whoever's in the chat here at the call, will you go to the Corinne Only channel? Betsy, I'm promoting you now. Go to the Corinne Only channel, grab that Facebook link, pop it into the chat so everybody can see it if they want to read it. So what Sandy did was she did the monk meal, which is If you're listening to this on replay, you know, years from now, a monk meal is simply where you're going to do like what it says. You're going to be dead ass quiet. You're going to eat your meal by yourself, and you're going to take notes the whole time of everything that little ratchet brain of yours has to offer. Be like, I want you to sit down and say, like, brain, I want all of it. Give me your best shot. Because you really want to hear all these subconscious thoughts. And Sandy really exemplified why we do this. So she completed her monk meal. It completely shocked her to hear all of the thoughts that her brain went to. So I'm just going to read off some of her thoughts. 20 minutes is a long time. I'm squandering away my day. I don't think this is enough food. This is going to be so boring. These grape tomatoes taste amazing. I need to stop slouching. Sit up straight. This flauta is so good, but it's not as good warmed up. I'm pulling up my shoulders tight. Relax. I remember when my parents were upset because they thought I didn't stand up straight enough. My mom bought me an elastic brace to wear. I hated it. I thought I looked fine. My dad used to remind me not to rub my lips mindlessly and not to sit with my mouth hanging open. It looked bad. My dad critiqued my parents a lot. I shouldn't be criticizing my parents. They were good parents. Everything I do should honor my family name. People are always watching. You're pulling your shoulders up by your ears again. Stop it. Why do I have a running to-do list going on in my head? I feel like I need to be productive. I'm retired. I should be able to relax. I should wash my hair. It looks stringy. And there was more. The end was, why can't I relax? This is why. Unaddressed mental chatter. This is why it's hard to relax. It's not that it is hard to relax. It's that what we do is we forget to listen to what we actually think about. And when we listen to what we think about, here's what gets easier. Noticing when our mind wanders and then pivoting it back to everything's fine. Or if you've debunked some of the thoughts, oh, remember, we already worked on that. This is just old leftover thinking. We don't need to worry about that. Like, literally, this is the most important work we do. Because for a lot of you, when you're not doing monk meals and you're not listening to your brain, that's what goes on the inside. And you don't hear it. It's just like the background music now of your life. So I went in and I left a note for her because she asked, like, her question was, well, what do I do with all of this? Like, holy shit, I do a monk meal. Now I've uncovered all this crap. I don't know what to do with it. So this morning, as I was drinking my coffee right before I walked Sissy, I came up with 6 simple steps to do. Number one, take your list when you do a monk meal, cross off the stuff that doesn't need work. So there's going to be things like, ooh, this tastes so good. Of course, food should taste good. We don't want to get rid of that thought unless we're using that thought to overeat, which means this tastes so good and I don't want to stop, or and I need to finish it. We want to work on the and whatever comes after it. But if you're just commentating on your food tasting good, you actually want to acknowledge to yourself, like, yeah, it does taste good. Isn't it amazing that I'm learning how to lose weight while eating foods I like? It's so different than anything I've done before. I bet this helps me with weight loss. So we cross off that stuff and any general commentary, like, I should have heated this up, or this would have tasted better this way. You do not need to do thought work on stuff like that. We just, like, that's just like your brain just commentating, and that's fine. We need commentary. The second thing you want to do is highlight patterns. So, like, when I was looking at her stuff, 2 distinct patterns jumped out. One was she kept thinking about or thinking like her parents. There was a lot of reference to parental stuff. The second thing is she had a running to-do list, or she had thoughts about what she should be doing. She should be productive. So those would be 2 different patterns. Step 3 is just pick 1 pattern. You don't need to work on both of them. Not all thoughts need to get fixed. What we want to do is we just want to pick something and put our energy and effort into either a pattern of thoughts one specific thought or whatever, because as you work on that one, it doesn't mean you get rid of the rest. It means you prove to yourself that you can change your beliefs after you look at them and you do some work and stuff. You also learn the skill of, now if I just work on this one thing, every time I'm pivoting, then the next time you want to do one, you've already built the habit of knowing, or the skill of knowing how to pivot when you hear it, not judge it when you hear it. So that's why we only have to pick one, because we're going to learn a lot of thought work skills when we do that. Step four is you are going to put either the pattern, or you're going to put a thought through the four ends, especially the normalized step, where you are going to explain why you might be thinking about this, why this keeps coming up, how it makes sense that even today, some of these thoughts just run silently in your head. What we want to do in normalize is we want to understand compassionately our thinking. In normalizing, what we're doing is we're not judging it, we're not resisting it, we're not arguing with it, we're not saying you shouldn't be here, or oh my God, I shouldn't think these things, or I can't lose weight until these things stop. I want you to think about this. There is your commentary that you naturally have. So this is all my thoughts I already have while I'm eating the monk meal. And then I'm going to look at it, and then my brain's going to come up with a story about all my thoughts. What we want to do is, the story we want about our thoughts is in the normalized section. This is where we are saying, like, and this is how I want to think about these thoughts, not how I'm going to change these thoughts. But this is me explaining why they're here, understanding why they're here, asking questions like, I bet they're here for a good reason. I wonder what it could be. Even if it sounds like an asshole, I do wonder why it's visiting. It's probably got a good reason. So I need to interpret what these thoughts might be trying to tell me. Then the next thing that we do, number five, is we start listening for this shit to come up in our life. We want to pay attention. Like, do these thoughts hide anywhere else other than in food? So like in Sandy's case, a lot of these thoughts are probably happening in other areas of her life. She just so happens that it happens a lot when she's eating. And so now when you look at these things and you uncover them, it gives you control over your brain. Now you're like, okay, here's what I can do. Now I can start really listening for them. So I can, like, and I promise you, when you write all these things down and you think like, okay, I want to pay attention to see if I think about this, you turn on your RAS system in your brain. That's the reticular activating system of your brain. This is the brain's filter. So what it does is it scans the world and it highlights what you want to pay attention to. So if you suddenly become enlightened about your thoughts, you'll suddenly hear them in all the times that you didn't hear them before because your brain didn't think it was important enough to grab your attention. So here's how you know your RAS works, because everybody's does. If you've ever been in a crowded room and you heard your name, and all of a sudden you're like, did somebody say my name? Your brain thinks your name is important, and that when it's used, you need to respond. So even if there's 50 conversations going on in the room, you don't hear any of those because your RAS says we don't need their conversations. But if anybody says our name, we have to pull that out. Your RAS serves such a big function in your life. It's the system that keeps us from overloading. We have the capacity to take in everything, but it would fry us. So as humans, we have a filtering system that looks for what's important. And you, like, another good example is my mother. She was telling me the story last night where, so my uncle is a huge pot smoker. I'm just going to be real honest. He loved dope. He loved dope in the 70s, never grew out of it. Best thing ever happened to him was moving to Florida where he'd get it medicinally. So he smoked a lot. Well, she, like, for some, well, I know why, but every time the number 420 comes up, she's like, it's like my brother talking to me because he passed away suddenly 2 years ago. And so yesterday we were watching TV and there was a countdown clock going on a basketball game and it hit 420 and stopped. And she's like, there's Edwin talking to me. She's like, I just don't know why. I notice 420 all the time now. It's like, because the RAS is now looking for it. Before, her brain had no reason to pay attention to the number 420. And now she hears it and she sees it in all kinds of places. So you want to start listening. You'll start hearing them more because you've turned on your RAS by doing this work. And the last thing is when you hear these thoughts, I just want you to remind yourself, this is good to know that I'm thinking this right now. And what that will do is it will teach your brain that these are innocent thoughts that you don't need to really do a lot with. They are just things that you think. It's like if you were sitting in your house like me and I was looking out on the street, I'm going to watch a car pass by. But what I'm not going to do is run out into the street, go find it, say, why are you here? What are you doing? You shouldn't be in my neighborhood. I would never do that with passing cars because these thoughts are usually not that damn important. Some stuff we want to unwind, some stuff we want to do, it's up to you. But at the end of the day, no thought is that damn important. You don't have to give your consent to any thought anymore. You get to decide, oh, I'm really glad I know I think that I should be productive when I'm retired. So every time that thought comes by, you get to just like flick it. Like, yeah, no, I'm retired. I just forgot. I don't have anything to do. I don't have to do anything anymore. And you get to do that. Okay. I just wanted to throw that in today. It was a little unscripted, but I just thought it was so important this morning, especially coming off the heels of us just doing the monk meal. And I just thought this was such a great wrap up. So Betsy, you may want to talk to the team about possibly adding, like, let's edit this section out and add it to, or I mean, we could leave it in, but I would say take this section and add it to last week as like a bonus, like, and listen to a recap of what you might learn. That's what I would do. Okay. Let me get all my notes up for y'all. And then we're going to talk about, there you go. All right. Oh, I didn't pull up the Q&A. Sorry. If you have any questions today on what I'm fixing to talk about, you can pop them in the Q&A. Betsy will be over there. She's also in the chat helping out. And then let me grab this and let's talk about environmental stuff. All right. Let's talk about setting yourself up environmentally on how to stop it enough. So this whole month of March, our deep dive focus is all about making sure that you have practice and tools and education around just the stopping at enough portion of your whole doable hunger. So if you want more information, and this is, you're in the month of March of 2023, you can go to the monthly challenge page inside the No BS membership, nobswomen.com. You'll go to the monthly challenges on your menu. And that is where you can find all the information about monk meals and everything that we're doing this month. So hang on. Did you need something, baby? Okay. Cleaning up your environment, it is one of the easiest ways to create a new habit. So what we want to do is think about how can we look around our environment and make it easier for ourselves? How do we look around our environment and set ourselves up to win in what we want to do? So I want to address this for three types of No BS women. The first one is for our newbies. The second is for what I call stage two. So stage one is I'm new. I'm, you know, probably working on my first, say, 25 pounds, or I'm working on the first 25% of my weight loss, whatever that is. Because some of you only have, you know, 10 to 20 pounds to lose. And this would be like for the first, like 25% of that weight loss. So There's the second stage. Once you move past the newbie stage, which is, I call it the stalls and plateaus stage. This is where you are going to get into your weight loss, and you're going to start hitting natural stalls and plateaus. Sometimes you will be stalling because the scale's not supposed to go down every week. So for a couple of weeks, it has homeostasis, which is normal. We cover all of this inside the No BS weight loss course. So if you're just like, what? You might want to go and review the weight loss course. There's also an entire self-study course dedicated to stalls and plateaus. But the short of it is, they're supposed to happen. You don't need to be acting like a jackass because they do. And you don't need to sit there and be like, oh, it's so hard to lose weight that stall this week. No, it's not. You know what's hard? Whining and regretting and blaming and shit like that. You're supposed to have a stall or plateau. To lose weight, guess what you got to learn? Patience and persistence. What do you think a stall and plateau is trying to teach you? How to talk to yourself like a champ and not a chump. How to have some patience. Because look, you don't get to get whatever you want at the moment you want it. You ain't no two-year-old, so stop whining. And number three, persistence. You have to have the ability to keep going in weight loss when you know what you're going to do intellectually is going to work. Like intellectually, we're like, this is going to work. Persistence is your ability to emotionally keep going when you emotionally feel like it won't. If you want to lose weight, you got to have those three things. So a stall or plateau is there for you. Now, here's what happens. We get on a stall or plateau and we don't realize that it's time to reevaluate everything. So for those, some of you won't be whining. You will keep going. You keep trying. But you don't change anything. You just keep trying to do what you're doing right now and hoping it's going to shake something loose. Like somebody said, which I applaud you. She says, I've been on a stall 6 months ago. I don't have that much to lose, 15 to 20 pounds, but I keep trying. Bravo to you. I think that's amazing, Amelia. But here's what I need you to do. You need to look at what you're doing, because at 6 months, you're eating at maintenance. You're not stalling or plateauing. You've now reached maintenance level eating. So you have to look at, where can I make changes? Or is there some overeats that I'm hanging on to that I don't want to let go of, or that I'm just not paying attention to? It could be that extra, like, I swear to God, I know people think this is so stupid, but if you're eating extra vegetables just so you can feel full, those vegetables count. Weight Watchers was wrong. There ain't no free food. It's just like saying, well, I accidentally murdered that person. Can I get a get out of jail free card? There ain't no get out of jail free cards in weight loss. If you overeaten, like, this is where the diet industry has bastardized us. We think that some reason eating healthy food, overeating, that's virtuous. It shouldn't count. Should be okay. If your scale's not moving, it's saying, bitch, you can't overeat and expect to lose weight, period. No matter if it's virtuous or healthy or whatever. So for my stall and plateau people, what this lesson will teach you is it's probably time to reevaluate things. And I mean all of it. I'd reevaluate everything. I'd question everything. And then I'd listen for my shitty ass thoughts to come up. I shouldn't have to do that. Or, you know, that would be so restrictive. Like, eating a little bit less would be so restrictive. Go tell that to someone starving in another country, that if you don't get to finish your salad that's full of vegetables, that somehow you're being restricted. Somebody in a starving country would be grateful to eat a quarter of what you're getting and would live just fine. And they would think how abundant that is. So that's how we know. Like, I'm not saying this to shame y'all or anything. It's like the reality check. Sometimes we get so caught up in thinking, this is actually what's happening. I'm actually being restricted. I'm actually setting myself up for something. It's like, no, we're not. Sometimes, yes. But questioning what you're eating and trying to eat a little less to see what happens, this is not traveling dangerous roads. This is just literally what I'm trying to teach you is question everything, be intentional, like your reasons. You do that, you're not going to go down the dangerous roads. Okay. Then there's the third person, which is our maintenance and end stage people. And these are the people who are, let me just go back. I didn't finish this. All I want you doing in the stalls and plateau stage is examine and question your environment so that you can see what you are no longer seeing. Because what happens when you get to those points where you stall out for a while, you just get super proficient and good usually at the basics. Most people will say, I'm following them most of the time. This is why we need to look at our environment stuff, because you need to recalibrate. You're either in such a habit state of this new that is so much better than what you did, but it's now keeping you in maintenance and you have to recalibrate again, just like we do in the beginning. We recalibrate in the beginning, or you're snowblind to the little shit. You actually need to dial in harder. And I don't mean make it hard, but like look at things that you are uncomfortable at looking at that you think shouldn't matter. That's where you look, because I guarantee you that's where the work is. The last is that maintenance and end stage. Now, this is somebody who's either I'm in maintenance or I'm coming up on it. I'm probably within my last, 5 to 10 pounds. If you've had more weight to lose, like if you were like me, I hit end stage in the last 20. So it just depends. If you're like Amelia and you only have 20 pounds to lose to begin with, your end stage is probably like the last, say, 5 to 8 pounds. If you have 100 pounds to lose, that could be upwards of 20 pounds. So in this stage, you want to re-clean your environment so that it can expose any diet mentality that you're hanging on to that might be flying underneath that radar. And an environmental reset will help you design your world from your current identity, this new identity of someone who's, I'm going to get it all off and I'm going to keep it off. I am becoming a maintainer. So we want to design our environment from that mindset. So here are the four things that you need to know about your environment. Number one, we do not get rid of foods from self-loathing. We only do an environmental cleanup from a place of love for ourselves. So what does that mean? Cleaning up your environment from love doesn't say, I have to do this in order to get success. I want you to think about how shitty that feels. Like I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to, I can't keep these foods around me. That will always feel gross. It will feel restrictive when you talk like that. It will feel punishing. It will feel admonishing. Like nothing good comes of that thinking. So what you want to do, sorry, I've got people, y'all, if you could just see the action going on outside my window, furniture being delivered. Chris is lurking around like a weirdo, looking at me now, grinning. All right. So what you want to do is you want to come up with reasons why you might want to clean up your environment that are from love and compassion. So for me, for example, if I'm going to get rid of something for a little while, I usually tell myself, I want to make it easier on me to focus on different foods. Or like a good example is, so I've been eating wheat bran. If y'all don't know, I'm sure you do. I love my wheat bran. But I told JJ this week, like, don't order me no more wheat bran. I need to take a break. And she was like, why? And I said, because I'm starting to want to eat it for breakfast and dinner. And I need to get back on my veggies. And I know me. All I need is to get it out of the house for a little while. Give myself one option, which is you don't have cereal to lean on. So now you actually do need to eat these foods. And then we'll bring it back when I'm ready. And I do this reset, but anytime I start noticing a pattern of like mindlessly eating, breaking my plan or whatever. Notice I don't sit there and be like, oh, Corinne, you're a loser. You lead the group. You shouldn't be doing that. I mean, hell, you've been like, I don't talk like some of our elders. There ain't no one more elder than me in this group. I was the original OG member of No BS. Could you imagine if I sat there and talked to myself like, y'all, oh, you've been at this for 16 plus years. You think you have your shit together by now. Corinne does not talk to herself like that. Why? Because I learned while I was losing weight loss, there's no good to come out of it. I just feel like shit. And very rarely when I talk to myself like shit, do I not want more food. I usually want to eat more because I feel helpless. So I'm like, okay, well, when those thoughts come in, I got really good at being like, yeah, no, that's not really the truth. The truth is, right now, I don't want to eat wheat bran. I like it. I love it. It's easy. It's convenient. It's got a lot of good qualities. But I also know that I do better when I eat like a healthy dinner and not just cereal because I'm tired. So I'm going to set myself up to need to make better choices. Okay. So you want to come up with reasons why it's a very loving decision to possibly remove some of the foods that you find hard to stop at enough with. And then you want to identify those foods in your house that are hard for you, that, you know, they trigger you to want to overeat, or you, like, when you look at them, you're like, ooh, that's like one of those foods, blah, 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 blah. I want you to decide that you are not out of control around these foods. It's very easy for us to tell ourselves that food controls me or I'm out of control around it. And that will feel very true. But just because it feels true, it doesn't make it the only truth available when you're talking about it. I want to say that one more time. Just because something feels true, and we could argue that it's true, it does not mean it is the only truth available to us in a way to talk about this. So instead of that food controls me, you could also say, I'm learning that that food has never had actual power. You could say, like, here's what I know. It can't get in my mouth without my consent. Ever. That even means if you are shoveling away, rather than saying, I can't control myself, at least say, I'm the one who keeps eating it. I just need to figure out why. Notice that when you articulate the problem correctly, your brain now knows what it needs to focus on. If you think that food controls you, the only answer is you can never be around it. So we get rope-a-doped into this belief that there's going to be a day that all your shit comes together beautifully, and that you now just never eat that food again. It's called, let me tell you what the term is. I'm actually studying this right now for No BS Excuses Weekend. If you're not signed up for the No BS No Excuses Weekend, you should. I'm just telling you, it is great content. It's called hyperbolic discounting. Hyperbolic discounting is basically saying to yourself, like, if I'm thinking this food controls me, well, I'm just going to get rid of it because I can't control myself. Hyperbolic discounting is this game we play where it's like, hey, there's a version of me that has her shit together. She's never going to want this. And it's going to be easy for her to say no. So if I just get it out of the house, then I'll magically become her. So the next time I bring it in, like, because it's been gone, somehow my brain will have been rewired. That does not happen. It does not happen. It is actually a flaw in our thinking as humans. We all have it. A lot of people, my friend Carl Lowenthal calls it tomorrow thinking. Like, tomorrow I'm going to be so motivated. So today I'll just do this, knowing tomorrow I'm either going to feel better, do better, out exercise, under eat. Like we always have this fantasy that in the future, we're going to be this different person. And let me just say, there's no way you're going to be a different person tomorrow practicing the person that you are today. The only way to be a different person tomorrow is to practice being a different person today. So when you're thinking food controls me, one of the things you want to remind yourself is there's other truths to tell. Sometimes I think food controls me, but what I factually know is that I don't care how much my brain is screaming, the food cannot get into my mouth unless I consent with each bite. That actually is happening. Now, it may feel fast. It may not feel consensual because you're not used to thinking while you're doing it. So if you are doing that around food, my advice is to remember that. And then the next time you're eating, say like, I'm choosing this bite rather than this food controls me. And you might even say like, even though I'd like to stop, I'm not. When we are truthful in the moment, it helps us know what problems to really work on. When we say things like food controls me or I'm out of control, we can't slow our thinking down. Thinking I'm out of control around certain foods will never allow you to slow your thinking down enough to take control. That's the only way it'll happen. So then the other thing is that let's say we're going to remove some foods from our house. You're going to be like Cran, like there's certain things I'm just not going to have anymore because I want to reset things. I want to work on my mindset while they're gone. I want to establish, like, I want to give myself new opportunities to try different foods, to get used to eating other things. You know, if I don't have my, you know, binge foods and nosh foods around, then I'll be in a position to work on how I think and feel in the moments I want to do those things. Like, it's almost like thrusting yourself into, it's like, I know I overeat XYZ at night. I'm going to take that out of the house so that at night I don't have another option. And that will require me to find out what's truly going on for me. That's another truth that you could be telling. This is how we take power back. We don't take, like, food never had the power. We gave food power. Now we're going to take it back in our mind where it always was. Then what happens is once you clean up from a place of love, you can reintroduce these foods with intention. So what this means is what I watch a lot of people do is like, all right, I get rid of certain food for a while. And then one day, it's at the grocery store, looking all cute and sassy. I'm like, oh, Oreos. I hadn't had them in the house in a long time. You know, I've come so far. Let's just bring them back and see what happens. That's not intentional. That means you're going to reintroduce the food without any kind of new practice. So what is important is that when you reintroduce the foods, you reintroduce them with our tools. So let's say you're like, I'm ready to bring Oreos back in my house. First, I'm going to bring them home and I'm going to portion them so that my eye can now see what a portion of Oreos looks like. Not what I want, not what I mindlessly eat, but my brain actually needs to see these in my environment in a whole new way so that I can interact with them in a whole new way. Then I'm going to eat them for the first 2 weeks, doing it monk meal style. I'm not going to do it like I always did, standing in the pantry or whatever. It is a controlled experiment, bringing them back in so that as I'm eating the Oreos, I know that my old thoughts are going to come back. And when I do it monk meal style, I will hear them. Then I can work on them. Next, you use your foods with the Fuck It Foods worksheet. We also have that in the No BS Weight Loss course. So it's like, all right, a couple of weeks I do monk meals. Maybe for a couple more weeks, I'm like, Now I'm going to do them with a discovery worksheet. I just want to see, are they as good as I think? You could do one, you could do both, however you want to do it. The more ingrained diet mentality or a feeling of loss of control around food is for you, I would do every tool we have for a while. It will help you slow your brain down. It will help you reset and reestablish the relationship with the foods that you have. If it's like for me with my cereal, it's not a big deal. I can go like 3 or 4 weeks, get used to like eating dinner again, reintroduce my cereal and have no problems for months on end. I don't know when the switch flips, but it's not so debilitating in my life where I'm like, this is not something I want to spend tons of time working on. This is just something now I know a pattern of mine when it comes to food is at some point I have patterns that I identify as like, oh, here I am again, like taking the easy way out with some food. That's fine. I know about that about me. I also know how to take the easy way out on unwinding it. Simple as that. Now, the second thing is we want to make good decisions that are easy and automatic. So when you bring foods in your house, like these are just some tried and true tips from me. Number one is if you are a snacker, prep your snacks. Don't just like graze. Like with me, I don't keep nuts in the house. If there's any nut in the house that I like, I portion it. Because I know me, it's just so easy to just grab nuts. It's easy for me to think they're healthy. I just want a roadblock between me and that. I don't want to have to unwind all that. Like, I'm just like, I can either change the environment and make things simple not to do, or I can choose all the thought work and do all that. If it's important to you, do it. But there's just some things I'm just like, you know, I don't have to work that hard to solve this problem. If there's an easy fix, take it always. So meal prep your snacks, and then you might even want to label them for the days that you want to eat them. Maybe you want to have a snack of Oreos like on Tuesdays and Fridays. Then you label it, this is the Tuesday, Friday snack. But Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it's almonds, whatever you want to do. Set timers when you're eating to remind yourself to check in at enough. This is very helpful for people who are just like, I just lose track of time. Like I get to eating and I forget. Setting a timer will interrupt you so that you don't forget. You don't have to sit there and beat yourself up. It's normal to forget shit. It just is. I want you to think about this. Asking, have I had enough? After, if you're like me, you know, say, let's pretend I've never been introduced to no BS. I'd be coming into no BS with 48 years of eating one way until the end. Not asking, have I had enough? It's a ridiculous ask of yourself and a ridiculous shame moment when you think that after a few weeks, a few months, or even a couple years of doing this, that you wouldn't forget. If you have been at this for a while and you said, like, because this happens to me all the time, I do my basics. But do you think I really remember to ask, have I had enough at every fucking meal? If you do, please brain check yourself. Oh my God. Number one, y'all gotta quit putting me on, like y'all put me on an incredible pedestal. I don't want to be on your damn pedestal. You know why? Y'all's pedestal is as high as my fucking house. And if I ever fall off of it, I'm going to break my neck and die. Y'all need to put me like on a step. Like that's about where I'm at. So I forget too. And guess what? When I notice, because I'm filling out my shit, that I'm not, you know, abiding by enough, I'm like, oh, I need to set a timer again. I need to get back into the habit of it. Habits, they come and they go. The funny thing about habits is because they're so automatic, you don't know when they're eroding all the time. And you also, it's like they're just building. They both build and erode at the same pace usually. They just feel different. So the best way to know if you are kind of getting a little loosey-goosey on your shit or whatever is to do like me. I track a lot of stuff. If I notice I'm not tracking, I tell myself, How do I get started? Pen and paper, bitch. It ain't complicated. Don't make this some kind of like brain surgery. Like, I love it when you're like, how do I start making a 24-hour plan? Literally, it's called pen and paper and set your ass down. You can even stand at a counter. You don't even have to sit if you don't want to. What you're really asking me is, how do I feel good about starting? Don't wait to feel good about it. Number one, I'd never wait to feel good about starting anything. If I thought something was valuable, I would just go do it because it's valuable and dread it the whole way. That's how I get a lot of shit done. This morning, I didn't work out at all. It was just Marco Polo and Jane saying, "Ugh, girl, I just don't want to do this. I have no interest." I listed off all the other things I wanted to do. And then I closed the Marco Polo up. Well, I'm going in there. There was not a bone in my body that wanted it. But I'm just really good at telling myself my level of motivation, desire, and want to doesn't have anything to do with getting it done. Nothing to do with it. You know what has to do with getting it done? Doing. That's it. It's nice when you're motivated. It's great when you want to, but it's not a requirement. It's like saying, I'm going to give you an ice cream sundae and you bitching and moaning if there's not hand-crushed pecans, cinnamon sugared and dusted on them. It's like, you want the sundae or not? And that's what y'all are always like. You just put so many requirements on getting shit done. It's like, no wonder you don't get shit done. It's got to meet this, and I need to feel this, and this has got to happen, and the world's got to be perfect, and nobody can get in my way, and I got to have a clear schedule, and for God's sakes, nothing can go wrong. And that's hard to get shit done when you require everything to be right. The next thing you can do is have your no BS reminders visible. That's just like sticky notes. Print off the doable hunger chart. In fact, it is inside the no BS weight loss program. And if you go to the Am I Hungry lesson, I believe that's lesson 3 or 4, the doable hunger chart is right there for you. Print that motherfucker and put it on your refrigerator. Put it on your kitchen table. Put it wherever you need to see it. Screenshot it on your phone. So when you're at work, you can look at it while you eat. You can also use some of your camp swag. This year's camp swag is all designed around environmental triggers to highlight your bullshit excuses. If you want that box, I'd sign up for camp. You can't come in person because we sold out, but you can come virtually. And it's a baller fucking show. I'm just going to tell you. I spend a lot of money and a lot of my brain making sure that that virtual experience is unlike douchebag experiences you've experienced everywhere else. This is not your mama's Zoom call. The last thing is to reduce your negative influences in your environment. If you always want to stop like at a certain drive-through, like me, I used to always want to stop at fucking McDonald's on my way home from work, then take another route home for like 2 weeks. It may take you 10 minutes longer to get home or 5 minutes longer to get home, but you drive in a way that you don't have to drive by the place that your habit brain's going to take over and like, oh, we should just eat that. Decide before you even pull out the parking lot, which way you're going home. New way. If your weekends are the hardest time for you to stop at enough, look around and see what you can change in your environment. Maybe you on Friday night, you meal prep your breakfast, or maybe you do it on Thursday. I used to have a client who she did a meal prep. Her name was Marie. She would meal prep on Sundays that would get her through until Thursday. And then Thursday nights, she called it her like mini prep. She noticed that on the weekends, she ate like an asshole, mainly because she'd run out of food. And she was like, I just decided on Thursdays, I'm going to make delicious stuff for me to eat all weekend. And I'm going to really plan my weekends on Thursday nights while I'm still excited about weight loss, while I'm still kind of in my routines and stuff. And then that way I can craft weekends that allow me to be on plan that are different than my Monday through Thursday and that I can enjoy. And it worked for her. You can also like suggest new restaurants to the people that you love. Like if you're going to a specific restaurant all the time that y'all like it, but you have a really hard time eating like something that you don't regret, or you have a hard time with stopping at enough, go somewhere else for a little bit. Just try something new because it'll be a reset at a new restaurant. And then don't sit in what we all know is our eating chair. Almost every no BS woman I know has a chair, a spot on the couch, or a place in the bed where they do their like badass noshing. Do not sit in those places. It is an easy hack. For a few weeks, sit somewhere else. It'll be uncomfortable, but it's not terrible. If your ass is not in your comfy chair, sit somewhere different so that your brain, not only are you sitting somewhere different, but then it will be more aware to you if you are asking for food. All right. So if you like this topic, like if this is kind of your jam, if you look at the How to Lose Weight in 2023 workshop we did, it's underneath the events tab. We did it in January of this year. We had a whole lesson, video, and worksheet on cleaning up your environment. So if like this speaks to you and we're like, whoo, then what you want to do is you want to watch that video and you want to do that worksheet. Leticia says, could we have that process for reintroducing foods written up somewhere? I had to cut so many good foods out and I'm working to incorporate them properly. This is one of my, Leticia, there's no process. Literally, I just made shit up in my brain as I was talking. So here's the process. You can write it down right now. Step one, for 2 weeks, you do monk meals around whatever food you're reintroducing. You only eat it monk meal style every time you eat it. Otherwise, you don't eat it so that you can find all your thoughts. That's it. Then, if you want, for the next 2 weeks, you can do fuck it food worksheets around it. Some people will want to do both. Some people will only choose one. You only need to use the tools for as long as you need them or as often as you need them. Once you start feeling, and this is the important part, Leticia, is let's say you do it monk meal style for a couple of weeks. And every time you find the thoughts, you like rewrite them. Like you're like, all right, let me rewrite these. Let me put them through the four ends. If you want to use that process I did in the beginning, if you follow the Facebook post that we linked you to, it's underneath hashtag Corinne's advice in the Facebook group. I typed all 6 steps out right there. So that's all typed out. You can take your thoughts that you find around those foods and you can use that 6-step process with them. The other thing, do people ever monk meal a drink? I'm thinking coffee with cream. Yeah, you can monk meal anything. You can monk meal like monk style shopping online. You can do it with any habit you need to break. You could do it with like you could have a controlled time where you're going to worry. If you have a habit of worrying, you just tell yourself, whoop, we're not worrying until it's monk worry time. And you just sit down, you're like, all right, time to worry. What are all my worries? And you write every single one of them out and you have like 20 minutes to where you worry. But the key to that is through the rest of the day, every time you're worrying, you have to be like, whoop, nope, we're not worrying until monk worry time. Save it for later. And your brain will save it for later. So you don't have to worry about losing it. Nobody has to worry about losing their worries. Worries seem to never get lost. Ida says, I can't clean up my environment because I have other family members that have food around that I can easily overeat. It makes it really hard. Ida, you can. What could you do? That's called an excuse. I can't is always an excuse. Is it that I can't or I won't come up with other things I could do? So here's some of my suggestions, Ida, because I live in a house where there's certain foods that aren't going anywhere either. So like with my son, he loves tortilla chips. Like there's all kinds of stuff. Could you put them in a big plastic bin where it's labeled my family's food? or not for Ida. Wait, number one, that's an environmental switch. Could you move them to the top shelf of the pantry if you're short? Could you put them in there and then put a ladder in there for your squirts to go get it? Could you ask them, hey, do y'all mind if for 2 weeks we don't have these in the house? There are things we can do. But no one needs to, this is the thing. I just want to tell everybody, please don't use your family as an excuse for why you can't lose weight. So many of us don't even realize we do it. We use those sweet, like if it, you know, what, you know, Ida, when you say, I can't because of my family, short of you sending them all off to another country to live, you just told your brain, there's no way I can lose weight while having a family. That's a terrible message to send yourself. One thing you could tell yourself is, I can learn how to be around these foods by doing different things with them. That's equally as true. We don't have to take foods out of the house to have a better relationship with them. We can move them around. We can make them harder to get to. If your family eats certain foods and you keep them on the same shelves in the same places all the time, guess what? Your brain's in a habit. No wonder you don't know when you're grabbing it, y'all. Move it around. Reorganize your pantries. So that for a few weeks, guess what? You're like, before I actually can grab the food, like I'm having to turn my brain on to find it because I don't know exactly where it is. And during the time that my brain comes on to have to find it, I've turned on my reasoning brain. The problem with our foods, and I'm not stopping enough, is very often we've turned off our reasoning brain. We're just in the habit part of our brain. So making any kind of changes you can will help with that. What are the three things? Patience, persistence, and what's the third? I done forgot. Lord, y'all always be asking me stuff that I say as if I'm just sitting here with like detailed notes, asking the chat. I'm sure it was wise and amazing, but that's just me preaching off the cuff. So you might want to watch the replay or ask in the chat. Maybe someone else wrote it down and it would be in there. All right, y'all. Thank you so much. Guess what I'm getting ready to do? I am getting ready to talk to the doctors about the weight loss drugs. So that's the podcast I'm going to be doing. It's not live. We have agreed to not do it live because I'm going to need to, I got to read stuff and do all kinds of junk. So it would kind of be a boring presentation. So, but that those podcasts are going to come out to the public in a few weeks, but we are giving all of that to you. So the first podcast that I did was on Monday. And I did that live with all of you. We put that in the replays that night because so many of you wanted to hear it. We normally can't turn things around for about 24 hours, but we had someone willing to, I think it was a Coach Betsy, willing to work late, willing to get it done and move some stuff around so that she could get it up for y'all. We are now going to do the doctor's one. And then when we can get that one turned around, there's some editing that actually has to happen with that one. So it won't be an insta turn like that one was. But once we get it, we're going to drop it into your private member podcast and we're going to put it with the other one so that you have that easily accessible at all times. You won't have to go to the public website and dig through the hundreds and hundreds of episodes and that kind of thing. All right. Y'all have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye.